Good evening. I'm Tom Foley, the Speaker of the House. Earlier tonight, you may have seen me sitting behind President Bush as he delivered his address. The first time I was present for a State of the Union message, I was a young staff member working here in the Capitol for one of the giants of the United States Senate, Scoop Jackson of Washington State. It was the cold winter of 1962, a few months after the Berlin crisis. And President Kennedy spoke eloquently to the Congress and to the country of the burden and the glory of freedom. Today, as we begin a new decade, we join together to celebrate the glory of a new era of freedom. This new era is not a coincidence or an accident. It's coming in due in large measure to those who carried the burden for nearly half a century, presidents and people alike, defenders and dissenters, congresses and administrations, from Harry Truman to George Bush. In a special way, the credit goes to successive generations of young Americans, the 25 million who have served in the armed services since World War II, and the 350,000 who have been wounded or lost their lives. And in the end, the credit goes to all the American people who have paid the cost and stayed the course of a Cold War that was the longest conflict in American history, and perhaps the most fateful conflict in American history, modern history. Some doubted it could ever end, except in defeat or in flames. But we as a nation met John Kennedy's challenge to persevere, to look beyond our own shores and ambitions, and so we have helped, in Ronald Reagan's words, to turn the tide of history away from totalitarian darkness and into the warm sunlight of human freedom. The events are still unfolding, and the old world's new revolution of hope is still unfinished. But this is a time of honor and pride for America and for free men and women everywhere. We have a continuing obligation to fulfill, an obligation to those who struggle on from South Africa to China. Who could ever forget the bravery of one Chinese student who stood all alone in the front of a tank near Tiananmen Square and stopped? We Democrats believe it was wrong for the Bush administration to yield to pressure from a communist dictatorship in Beijing. It was wrong for the president to veto a bill that would have safeguarded Chinese students in America from being sent back to their homeland's reign of repression. One lesson of the past 45 years is that no Congress and no president should be timid in the defense of freedom. There's another underlying truth in the ferment sweeping the globe. We are perhaps near the end of a great struggle, but we are certainly not at the end of history. The 1990s will be a period of profound and continuing change. This new decade marks more than a division of time, and it will lead to more than a new century. For there are new realities to be grasped, new challenges to be met, and very different battles to be won. In the 1990s and well into the next century, the central challenge for America will be economic, not military. The greatest test of our strength will be our classrooms, not our missile silos. The gravest threat will come not from any nation's attempt at world domination, but from every nation's complicity in the worldwide destruction of the environment. This period of vast change will be a period of fundamental choice. Much of what the president said tonight, I agree with. Some of what he said I disagree with, but my purpose here is not to debate point by point. I'm here to tell you what we as Democrats believe, where we stand, the values we hold, the vision we have, and the choices we face. First, we believe that we must renew our economic capacity and regain control of our economic destiny. Today, the America that invented the computer chip and the VCR has seen its market share shrink or vanish in both products. We are falling dramatically behind in new technologies, such as high-definition television. As Democrats, we're not satisfied with the trend that has seen this nation drop from first to sixth in the standard of living. We're not satisfied to be told that within 10 years, the average West German worker may earn 150% as much as the average American worker. We're not satisfied to have American students ranked near the bottom of the industrial nations in math and science. We will set a national goal of making our schools once again the best in the world by the year 2000. On this issue, the president's words seem to agree with us, but his actions say something else. You can't become the education president with all the problems we face by proposing a meager 2% increase in the education budget. That's a fact, and for all the talk, that's exactly what the president proposes to do. We also believe that American corporations have the responsibility and should have the opportunity to reinvest in America. We believe that the wave of corporate mergers and leveraged buyouts is a waste of resources. It leaves Wall Street raiders with large sums of money in their pockets, and it leaves our companies overburdened with debt and weakened in competing for world markets. This issue represents another real difference between us and the Republicans. For too many years, their policies have encouraged debt and quick profit instead of investment and long-term growth. The result, the amount of private resources put into research and development, has fallen in real dollars. It's imperative to reverse this trend and to secure America's place on the frontiers of enterprise and invention. At the same time, we must demand that nations trading with us give our products an equal chance in their markets. Products ranging from the innovations of the service sector to the abundant harvest of American agriculture. Make no mistake about it, we favor expanding trade, but we reject the idea of one-way free trade. We believe this nation should be in the business of exporting the goods our workers make, not the jobs our workers need. We also believe in encouraging a rise in savings, which have collapsed to a record low during the 1980s. The Republicans say they want to do this in part by cutting the capital gains tax, a cut which would give 80% of the benefits to the richest 1% of Americans. Instead, we are fighting to restore IRAs so middle-income families can save as much as $2,000 a year tax-free and then use the money for their own retirement or as a down payment on a first home. We took on the struggle against capital gains when the odds were against us. We won last year. And this year we will do all we can to make sure that the greatest part of any tax cut of any kind goes to those of you who live on a paycheck, not just the few who have the highest incomes, the largest stock portfolios, and by the way, the potential for the biggest tax shelters. This issue goes to the heart of the reason we are Democrats. Above all else, we stand with you, the people who go to work and pay the taxes. It is your cause to which we are committed, and your side on which we fight. So we will also fight for the most effective clean air bill, even though that may offend entrenched and powerful interests. We will fight for child care so that working parents don't have to choose between their family's standard of living and their children's standard of care. We will fight for campaign finance reform. We disagree with the administration's opposition to limits on campaign spending. Let's be blunt about it. Don't we all know there's simply too much money being raised and being spent in American politics? And there is another issue on which we have only just begun to fight. This administration's practice of misusing the Social Security Trust Fund to hide the size of the federal budget deficit. Social Security involves more than a trust fund. It involves the basic bond of trust between our people and our government. From the beginning, Social Security has been the Democratic Party's proudest achievement. We reject the suggestion of some Republicans to privatize the system. They say that's a new idea. We think it's the same old bad idea, another version of the repeated Republican attempt to undermine Social Security. Finally, as Democrats, we believe that there are areas where the government simply does not belong. We will continue to defend a woman's right to choose, for we are convinced that politicians cannot and should not attempt to make the choice. But we also believe government can have a positive role, not to dominate, but to help people improve their own lives. The reason we have so many homeless in America today is not because government has cared too much, but because it has cared too little. We have to do better than that on a whole range of critical needs. We will seek to secure the right of all of our children to learn in better schools and to earn a better life. We will seek to secure the civil rights of all our people. We can't celebrate freedom abroad and then deny freedom at home. We are also committed to the strongest possible attack on the drugs that are attacking our society and our families. On this we are all united. Narcotics destroy the children of Democrats and Republicans alike. One of my first jobs was as deputy prosecutor in my hometown of Spokane, Washington. I believed then, and I believe now, in enforcing the law, not in legalizing drugs. We won't win this struggle overnight, or in a few months, or even over a year or two. But together we can begin to reclaim our streets, and our schools, and our neighborhoods. Let me say it again. We will work with the president wherever and whenever we can. On some issues we will have differences, because we care deeply about certain principles and about the people who have been the abiding concern of the Democratic Party. Today, we Democrats stand, as we have before, for working families. We stand for both economic justice and economic opportunity, for protecting the environment, for senior citizens and the soundness of Social Security. And where we must, we will disagree with this administration. We will stand our ground when that is the only way we can stand for you. Above all else, we have high ambitions for America in the 1990s. We cannot be content to be bystanders, riders on the storm of history. For we are living in one of those rare seasons of change that come to few generations. We are being challenged by countries who say America is in decline, that we can never again be the best in the world marketplace. We do not accept that. We reject those who assume that Americans aren't smart enough, or disciplined enough, or tough enough to rise to the moment. We were in the 1940s, and we saved the post-war world. Now we must strengthen our own country. The time has come for America to help herself, to rebuild, to re-energize, to reinvigorate our hopes, to gather together our talents and reclaim our place in the world. In the short span of this decade, we have a long way to move as a nation. Let us resolve that on that day, when America enters the 21st century, we shall be first. First economically, first in education and science, first in human decency and human rights. Thank you. God bless you, and God bless our country.